We're in a study of the book, the chapter of Luke 15. And in this series, we're kind of calling it Below the Surface, kind of just taking a minute to read a chapter of the Bible that's very familiar and just think about it and talk about it and look at it from some different angles, perhaps, and some different ways. But one of the things that I think is important in all kinds of study, lesson, class, sermon situation is that we see ourselves in the story. And you got to turn it on. There you go, Dan. See yourself in the story. So in this story, I want you to try and see yourself in several different parts. Last week, Jeremy talked about the sun. The lost son, the son that left home, known as the prodigal son. And hopefully you saw yourself as the prodigal son. I was thinking about just sort of doing a survey here. And everybody who sees, there's three main characters. There's some other people involved. But the three main characters in this story are the son that left home, the son that stayed home, and the father. And so as you see yourself in the story, we're going to have a group of people. If you see yourself as the son who left home, go sit over here. And if you see yourself as the son who stayed home, go sit over here. And if you see yourself as the father, you know, go sit over here. And so in your mind, just get up and walk there. Don't do it. You know, we got so many people, we'd never find our seats again. We really think about this. Where do you see yourself in this story? And I'm suggesting that we're going to look at ourselves in each of these three roles. Henry Nouwen helped me get to this point in this book, The Return of the Prodigal Son. The Return of the Prodigal Son. And he based this book after spending some time with Rembrandt's famous painting of the return of the prodigal son. And when Henry Nouwen went to see it, you couldn't get in the room with it. It's so special. And in the museum where it was, in Russia, he was looking at the painting, and he got to go in and sit in the room with the painting. And he did that for like 3 days. And as he's thinking about it, just meditating on the story as he knows it from Luke 15, and then this painting, he out of him comes this book. And in the book, he does this. He looks at all, what if you take the perspective of the lost son and the son that stayed home and then the father? And today, we're going to look at it as the father. We're going to look at it as the father. So, you know, obviously, in which Jesus told the story, the father represented God. So hang on there just a second. That's going to be you today. So think about yourself. You know, if I was God, I would make it, I wouldn't have droughts like we're having right now. But that's not the God you're playing. You're just thinking about it, the father figure in this story. And so first of all, I have the weird title of the prodigal father. The prodigal father. And years ago, a college student that was in one of my classes did a sermon at Wednesday night at Highland, and he called it the prodigal father. And he did that based on this definition of prodigal, which is kind of interesting. Spending money or resources freely and recklessly, wastefully extravagant. Having or giving something on a lavish scale. And isn't that kind of God? Isn't that who God is? And it was this father also, because, you know, we first run into the father, and what he's doing is, he's giving his kid what he's asking for, which, you know, a reasonable father would not have done that. You know, he'd have grabbed the kid and thrown him out the door, said, come back when your attitude's straight and when you might get some dinner. But for sure, he wouldn't have just given him what the boy was asking for. But he did. Now it says that this is because God and how God is with us, isn't he? He gives us the freedom to love, which also means the freedom to not love. He wants you to be free to love him, but not forced, not coerced. Love me. And so he gives the boy what he asked for. And even as he does this, he gives the boy his freedom to leave or to love. Now, we're going to move ahead in the book, and what comes next is this is the painting, and there's a couple of things about the painting. One of the things that's different than the actual story, one is that dad right there is not running. You know, our dad, the dad in the story is running. But this is story maybe as they get home, you know, this is still the boy kneeling at his father's feet. And there's so many details in the painting that I'm not going to hit on, but I want to talk about this painting and especially the idea of the father welcoming home. And I want to say this about the father welcoming home, and several of these ideas are spurred on by now, and then I sure enough read the Bible and, oh, well, there it is too. But as the father's welcoming home, there is no probation period. I don't know how it is when you forgive people, but sometimes I'm a little bit, you know, I'm going to give you a little bit and see how you do with it. And then we'll see if you really mean it. And then maybe I'll give you a little more forgiveness. And that's not God. That's not this father. The posture, I want to call the posture of this father is arms wide open. It was running and boom. Eyes, arms wide open. I want us to think about that, not only as a physical posture, but also a spiritual attitude, a spiritual posture. This is me as I welcome home. The father is welcoming this boy home. No probation period. Now, the other thing that Nouwen points out is the idea that there's a father and mother. And he especially points out in the painting how the two hands are different. The two feet are different too, but I'm just going to go with the hands. Can you see the difference in the two hands? And scholars forever have looked at this painting, noticing, calling the hand, which would be the left hand of the... Can you really see that? Because I can see it better than you, because I'm looking at this really nice screen. Looking at, well, nevertheless, they're different. He sees one, the left hand, is... the one that is more masculine. It's the hand of the father. The right hand, is more feminine, more gentle. And the idea that there's a father and mother, God. And this is again in the Bible. You know, there are several places that God is referred to as mother. And I'll get to that in just a minute, but I want you to think about a father, strong, he's holding, he's comforting, he's ensuring safety. I got you, son. The mother, gentle, offering comfort. I don't wonder about you. When you were a kid and you fell down or burned your hand or slammed it in the door or a bee stung you, but you're in pain, who did you shout out for? I think mostly for me it was mom. Mom, I'm hurt. Now, that I also would equally, if mom wasn't around, I'm definitely yelling for dad. But mom, I'm hurt. In Isaiah, it starts like this. There are several things about being a mother and how God kind of describes himself. And the first is this. Well, you know, it's good for me to have the right place. Isaiah 42. For a long time, Isaiah says, this is God. For a long time, I've been quiet and held myself back. But now, like a woman in childbirth, I cry out, gasp, and pant. Man, hats off, moms. You bore a child. Us fellas in the room, thank you. Thank you for being that mom. That this is God. In our formation, even he was crying out for and with us. But then he also says, that's in Isaiah 42. In Isaiah 49, he says this, verse 15, can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she's born? Though she may forget, this is what God's saying, I'm even more mom-like than your mom. I will never, see, I have engraved you on the palms of my hand. I think that God's tattooed with your hand, with your name on his hand. Think about that. But that this mother is the closest thing. I love the idea of a mom and the closeness they have, both things that men don't experience. They don't experience breastfeeding a baby. And most men, at least me, I say, thank you, Jesus, or childbirth. But there is this intimacy that happens between a woman and her child in both carrying the baby and in birthing the baby and then feeding the baby. And now it says, see this in this hand, that this is God. And then finally in Isaiah 66, it says, he says this. Probably. You know, sometimes the best laid plans. In Isaiah 66, it's this. As a mother comforts her child, so I will comfort you. So I will comfort Jerusalem, my people. And so here it is, the son has come home, and both mother and father have embraced the son. Not only that, I want to explore this idea no more, no less. When the son comes home, it doesn't make him the favorite. Now, that's what the older brother thinks. And some of you probably think you're the favorite or that one of your siblings is the favorite. I've said this before here. No doubt in my mind, I'm the favorite son because, you know, I'm the only son. But some of us, we're jealous because, you know, it seems like the other one. And this is what the one son thought. But in God, there's no jealous. There's no favoritism. And he's not comparing. You are you. Unique. Your brother or sister is you. Very unique. There's no more or no less. He loves them both, and he wants the best for them both. There's no favorite there. And then the idea of the heart of the father. The love of the Father is so great for us. The love of God is so great for us. And again, the way that I want to express it is this. He spread the arms of his son. He loved us so much. He gave his only son for us. And in this arms wide open is also the posture of the cross. But it's the posture of God welcoming me. The question here is, will I receive his love? Will I receive the hug? Will I receive the party? Will I receive it? God's offering it. Will God receive it? Will we receive it? And one of the things that in this idea of the prodigal father, the father who loved us first, loved us last, and that's what this last one point is, this first and everlasting love. 1 John says that we love God because he first loved us. But God knew us from the womb. He knew us at our birth. He loved us at the beginning. He loved us through our life. He loved us to the grave. He loved us through eternity. It's His first love and highest love, and it's our last love. You know, the grave is coming. And as it comes, God is with us, welcoming us into eternity. Welcoming us into eternity. There's another welcome home going to happen at the grave. It's going to be that welcome home. Now, one of the things that in this idea of the prodigal father, again, this reminded me so much of the song Reckless Love we sang a couple weeks ago, the idea of reckless love. And Corey Asbury, who wrote the song, wanted to clarify the term, and he did it several different concerts, you know. And so there's this live version of him giving the, and here's what he said. When I say that phrase, the reckless love of God, I'm not saying that God himself is reckless. I am, however, saying that the way he loves is, in many regards, reckless. His love bankrupted heaven for you. His love doesn't consider himself first. His love isn't selfish or self-serving. He doesn't wonder what he will gain or lose by putting himself out there. He simply gives himself away on the off chance that one of us might look back at him and offer ourselves in return. The recklessness of his love is seen most clearly in this. It gets him hurt over and over and over again. Make no mistake, our sin breaks his heart. Yet he opens up and allows us in every time. You know, this is the posture of vulnerability. And this is the posture of welcoming one who was your enemy. And now you say, I receive you as my friend. Corey continues to say this, his love saw you when you hated him. And when all logic said, they're going to reject me. But he said, God said, I don't care if it kills me. I'm laying my heart on the line. Now, one of the things that Nouwen does is this is the Father, and he's wanting us to see ourselves as the Father. Can we be that open to welcome someone back? Someone who's hurt us, someone who we don't know, someone who's been lost. Can we let our heart break? Man, and this is one of the Entertaining Angels song just kind of got me going here. I had a little allergy attack in my eyes. And it was this idea, man, my heart breaks for the lost. And as Cindy was sharing her thoughts, man, if our heart breaks for the lost, can we just open up our arms and invite them in? Welcoming. The prodigal father is a welcoming father, but he's not just that. He also calls for celebration. God is a partier. I'm just going to tell you, that's the way he is. From the beginning to the end, he's a partier. And, you know, I'm happy about that. I'm kind of a solo partier guy myself. Big parties are off-putting to me, but God, not so much. He's big party, small party. God is celebrating, and he welcomes, he calls for a celebration. You know, in Luke 15, all three stories, the sheep, the coin, the boy, they all call for celebration. That's the one thing they all have in common. There's something that's lost, there's something that's found, and the party happens. God wants the party to happen. He wants us to welcome, and then when they come home, we party. Now, one of the things about the party is that the prodigal father gave his very best. He was willing. He gave the kid all his half of half of his stuff. But then when the kid comes home, he's got a special calf ready to kill. I don't, what's your favorite steak? What's that taste that just is ready? You want to eat it now. It might not even be steak, but what is that? That's the prodigal father, what he's got cooking up for you. He's giving you, he wants to give his very best. Jesus, when he was made the water into wine, he didn't make cheap wine. Strawberry Hill, no. He had the good stuff, the better than the good stuff. He wants to throw a party. And so this is the thing I'm thinking about all of us. We're all different, and God knows that. So he's going to give the very best for you. And what's the very best for you? And what's the best? It frustrates me a little bit when people say, heaven sounds kind of boring. No way, man. God is going to light you up. It's going to be the party of parties. Now then, the idea also is this, that he's giving the very best even now as you've returned to him. It's not just that party's going to happen in heaven. Jeremiah 29, you know, the famous part. It says, he knows the plans that he has for you. Now, whoa, who knows the plans? He knows the plans. He knows the party plan. You may not know the plan, but he's got the plan for you that's best for you. And what he says in Jeremiah 29 is for hope and a future. He's got you, your stuff lined out. It may not be what you thought, because sometimes we don't even know what's best for us, but God has the very best. He's going to give the very best. Next, this welcoming is an invitation to joy. You know, joy and party go together. You know what doesn't go together? Party and grumpy. And that don't go together. It doesn't go together. And, you know, I'm most of my life, I've been the half full guy with half empty friends. And sometimes or once in a while, I'll run to a half full guy like myself. And we're dangerous because we might kind of go off the rails, you know, and the half empty, I want to say, often see themselves as the realistic one. You know, I'm the one who's going to tell you the truth about the matter. Your leg is broken and you'll never play football again. And, you know, and I want to say, yeah, but I'm still alive. Okay, well, you know, both things are true. How are we going to accept the invitation to joy? Well, one of the things is the Father chooses joy. He chooses to joy in spite of problems, because problems and heartbreak are going to continue. So what's the point here? How do you do this? How do you receive the invitation to joy? Here's what I want to think of this. That old song, hymn I sang a long time ago, Kaysen, before you were even thought about. Standing on the promises. I focus on what God has told me is true. Number one, he loves me. I start with that. Number two, he's going to provide for me. He's going to give me what I need. And so for me now is to look for it. I'm the, you know, you heard the story of the two brothers who were one was a pessimist and one was the optimist, and they got for Christmas, they opened the present that was for both of them, and it was a pile of horse manure, right? And the pessimist, and I see, I told you, and the optimist says, where's the pony? And so here's what I want to say to that. There's good in the middle of the bad. Where is the good, you say? Sometimes it's not until the promise that's going to be fulfilled. But I'll say this, not only just look for the good, but be the good. Man, when you come and live out the promises of God, I think it's this joy follows kindness. It is difficult to be grumpy with a kind person who's being kind to you. How about you be the kind person and just love? One of the things about, I think, us is human beings, we're often just looking at the right now, what's right in front of me. I want to celebrate not only what's right now, I want to celebrate right now, but I have a mind to tomorrow. I'm not going to live tomorrow today, but I know what's coming. I know His plan is good for me. So this idea in 2 Corinthians, Jesus never sugarcoated the problem of pain. He never sugarcoated the problem of pain. But in His celebratory life, man, the dude was having parties. As a matter of fact, chapter 14 of Luke is about a party. Chapter 14 of Luke is about a party whose guests, there's a guest list, and some of them, the problem isn't that they're cynical. The problem isn't that they're grumpy. They're just too busy. But He's inviting us. He's welcoming us to a celebration. Celebration of what? Celebration of love. Celebration of forgiveness. Celebration of healing. And so this is the party He's inviting us to. But He doesn't ignore that there's sorrow. So 2 Corinthians says, therefore we don't lose heart. Though outwardly we're wasting away, yet inwardly we're being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory. An eternal glory that outweighs the problems. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. Man, I want to party today because I know another one is coming up later. Dad, as in his 92-year-old self, several times in the last week, as we went to the hospital and as we got out and talked to friends and on the phone, often he would say, hey, I've read the last chapter. It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. But I live today. Well, maybe it's not all right today. And this is where I believe God's calling us to be the good, not just look for good, but be the good and be welcoming to the other party, the others who are coming, and some late to the party. Well, here's me. I love you guys. I anticipate worshiping with you. It's one of the best things I enjoy on a weekly basis, is worshiping with you. And you know, even this size group or bigger size group, it don't matter to me. You know, if it was just Danny and Steve and Casey and Joe that showed up, I'd be having a party. Maybe if it was just one of them, or maybe I'd party by myself. I've done that before too. But I love worshiping with you. And it's not just singing songs, even though I like to sing songs. It's that we worship a God who is welcoming us. Despite what we've done, despite the failures we have because we haven't done what we know we should have done, we've wasted some of our life. But God is wasting His love on you. Have you ever just... I had a date, Steve, with her, and it was like the best part was just wasting time with Vicky. Yeah, this is what I want to do. I was wasting time with you guys, worshiping God, right? So we're going to sing this last song about God's great love for us. And yet, I want you to remember the point of this sermon. The point of Henry Nouwen's point is that we can be the father, the mother who's receiving, who's welcoming, and who's celebrating. There's people in your life who need to be welcomed by God. There's people in your life who need to feel the welcome of God. And that might be you. That through you, they feel, they experience the welcome of God. And then because they have felt welcome, then they can get this next part of this next song, that this great God, creator God, loves us so much. This is what everyone in your world is, whether you know them well, whether they're just friends, work friends, coworkers, casual friends, strangers, husband, wife, daughter, son, mother, father, it doesn't matter. The person, every person wants to experience this welcome and this celebration by this Father. And you might be that person, that father, mother figure that communicates this welcome and this love. Let's sing.